Chapter 17. That I was never quite sure which finger I had used last. I couldn't lick off a letter after using it, for while that would have made success certain, it also would have provoked too much curiosity. There was curiosity enough without that. To the audience, I seemed more interested in my fingernails than I was in my subject. One or two persons asked me afterward, what was the matter with my hands? It was now that the idea of pictures occurred to me, then my troubles passed away. In 2 minutes I made 6 pictures with a pen, and they did the work of the 11 catch sentences, and did it perfectly. I threw the pictures away, as soon as they were made, for I was sure I could shut my eyes, and see them any time. That was a quarter of a century ago. The lecture vanished out of my head more than 20 years ago, but I would rewrite it from the pictures, for they remain. Here are 3 of them. Fig. 1. The first one is a haystack below a rattlesnake, and it told me where to begin to talk ranch life in Carson Valley. The second one told me where to begin the talk about a strange and violent wind that used to burst upon Carson City from the Sierra Nevadas every afternoon at 2 o'clock and try to blow the town away. The third picture, as you easily perceive, is lightning. Its duty was to remind me when it was time to begin to talk about San Francisco weather, where there is no lightning nor thunder either, and it never failed me. I will give you a valuable hint. When a man is making a speech and you are to follow him, don't jot down notes to speak from, jot down pictures. It is awkward and embarrassing to have to keep referring to notes, and besides, it breaks up your speech and makes it ragged and non-coherent. But you can tear up your pictures. As soon as you have made them, they will stay fresh and strong in your memory in the order and sequence in which you scratched them down. And many will admire to see what a good memory you are furnished with, when perhaps your memory is not any better than mine. 16 years ago, when my children were little creatures, the governess was trying to hammer some primer histories into their heads. Part of this fun, if you like to call it that, consisted in the memorizing of the accession dates of the 37 personages who had ruled England from the Conqueror down. These little people found it a bitter hard contract. It was all dates, and all looked alike, and they wouldn't stick. Day after day of the summer vacation dribbled by, and still the kings held the fort. The children couldn't conquer any 6 of them. With my lecture experience in mind, I was aware that I could invent some way out of the trouble with pictures. But I hoped a way could be found which would let them romp in the open air while they learned the kings. I found it, and they mastered all the monarchs in a day or two. The idea was to make them see the reins with their eyes. That would be a large help. We were at the farm then. From the house porch, the ground sloped gradually down to the lower fence, and rose on the right to the high ground, where my small work den stood. A carriage road wound through the grounds, and up the hill. I staked it out with the English monarchs, beginning with the Conqueror, and you could stand on the porch and clearly see every reign and its length, from the Conquest down to Victoria. Then in the 46th year of her reign, 817 years of English history under your eye at once. English history was an unusually live topic in America just then. The world had suddenly realized that, while it was not noticing, the Queen had passed Henry V, passed Henry VI. And Elizabeth, and gaining in length every day. Her reign had entered the list of the long ones. Everybody was interested now. It was watching a race. Would she pass the long Edward? There was a possibility of it. Would she pass the long Henry? Doubtful, most people said. The long George? Impossible. Everybody said it. But we have lived to see her leave him 2 years behind. I measured off 817 feet of the roadway, a foot representing a year, and at the beginning and end of each reign I drove a 3-foot white pine stake in the turf by the roadside, and wrote the name and dates on it. Abreast the middle of the porch front stood a great granite flower vase overflowing with a cataract of bright yellow flowers. I can't think of their name. The vase of William the Conqueror. We put his name on it, and his accession date, 1066. We started from that and measured off 21 feet of the road, and drove William Rufus' stake, then 13 feet, and drove the first Henry's stake, then 35 feet and drove Stephen's, then 19 feet, which brought us just past the summer house on the left. Then we staked out 35, 10, and 17 for the second Henry and Richard and John, turned the curve and entered upon just what was needed for Henry III. A level, straight stretch of 56 feet of road without a crinkle in it. And it lay exactly in front of the house, in the middle of the grounds. There couldn't have been a better place for that long rain. You could stand on the porch, and see those two wide apart stakes almost with your eyes shut. Fig. 2. That isn't the shape of the road. I have bunched it up like that to save room. The road had some great curves in it, but their gradual sweep was such that they were no mar to history. No, in our road one could tell at a glance who was who by the size of the vacancy between stakes, with locality to help, of course. Although I am away off here in a Swedish village one, and those stakes did not stand till the snow came, I can see them today as plainly as ever. And whenever I think of an English monarch, his stakes rise before me of their own accord, and I notice the large or small space which he takes up on our road. Are your kings spaced off in your mind? When you think of Richard III, and of James II, do the durations of their reigns seem about alike to you? It isn't so to me. I always notice that there's a foot's difference. When you think of Henry III, do you see a great long stretch of straight road? I do, and just at the end, where it joins on to Edward I, I always see a small pear bush with its green fruit hanging down. When I think of the Commonwealth, I see a shady little group of these small saplings which we call the oak parlor. When I think of George III, I see him stretching up the hill, part of him occupied by a flight of stone steps. And I can locate Stephen to an inch, when he comes into my mind, for he just filled the stretch which went by the summer house. Victoria's reign reached almost to my study door on the first little summit. There's 16 feet to be added now. I believe that would carry it to a big pine tree that was shattered by some lightning one summer, when it was trying to hit me. We got a good deal of fun out of the history road, and exercise too. We trotted the course from the Conqueror to the study, the children calling out the names, dates, and length of reigns as we passed the stakes, going a good gait along the long reigns, but slowing down when we came upon people like Mary and Edward I, and the short Stuart and Plantagenet, to give time to get in the statistics. I offered prizes, 2 apples. I threw one as far as I could send it, and the child that first shouted the rain that fell in got the apple. The children were encouraged to stop locating things as being ver by the arbor, or any oak parlor, or pee at the stone steps, and say instead that the things were in Stephen, or in the Commonwealth, or in George III. They got the habit without trouble. To have the long road mapped out with such exactness was a great boon for me, for I had the habit of leaving books and other articles lying around everywhere, and had not previously been able to definitely name the place, and so had often been obliged to go to fetch them myself, to save time and failure, but now I could name the rain I left them in, and send the children. Next I thought I would measure off the French reins, and peg them alongside the English ones, so that we could always have contemporaneous French history under our eyes as we went our English rounds. We pegged them down to the Hundred Years' War, then threw the idea aside. I do not now remember why. After that we made the English pegs fence in European and American history as well as English, and that answered very well. English and alien poets, statesmen, artists, heroes, battles, plagues, cataclysms, revolutions, we shoveled them all into the English fences according to their dates. Do you understand? We gave Washington's birth to George II. Apostrophe S. Peggs and his death to George III. Apostrophe S. George II. Got the Lisbon earthquake and George III. The Declaration of Independence. Goethe, Shakespeare, Napoleon, Savonarola, Joan of Arc, the French Revolution, the Edict of Nantes, Clive, Wellington, Waterloo, Plassey, Patay, Cowpens, Saratoga, the Battle of the Boyne, the invention of the logarithms, the microscope, the steam engine, the telegraph, anything and everything all over the world. We dumped it all in among the English pegs according to a date and regardless of its nationality. If the road pegging scheme had not succeeded, I should have lodged the kings in the children's heads by means of pictures. That is, I should have tried. It might have failed, for the pictures could only be effective when made by the pupil, not the master, for it is the work put upon the drawing that makes the drawing stay in the memory, and my children were too little to make drawings at that time. And, besides, they had no talent for art, which is strange, for in other ways they are like me. But I will develop the picture plan now, hoping that you will be able to use it. It will come good for indoors, when the weather is bad, and one cannot go outside and peg a road. Let us imagine that the kings are a procession, and that they have come out of the ark, and down near it for exercise, and are now starting back again up the zigzag road. This will bring several of them into view at once, and each zigzag will represent the length of a king's reign. And so on. You will have plenty of space, for by my project you will use the parlor wall. You do not mark on the wall, that would cause trouble. You only attach bits of paper to it with pins or thumb tacks. These will leave no mark. Take your pen now, and 21 pieces of white paper, each 2 inches square, and we will do the 21 years of the conqueror's reign. On each square draw a picture of a whale, and write the dates and term of service. We choose the whale for several reasons. Its name and William's begin with the same letter. It is the biggest fish that swims, and William is the most conspicuous figure in English history in the way of a landmark. Finally, a whale is about the easiest thing to draw. By the time you have drawn 21 whales, and written Ilyamite 1066 to 1087, 21 years 21 times, those details will be your property. You cannot dislodge them from your memory with anything but dynamite. I will make a sample for you to copy. Fig. 3. I have got his chin up too high, but that is no matter. He is looking for Harold. It may be that a whale hasn't that fin up there on his back, but I do not remember. And so, since there is a doubt, it is best to err on the safe side. He looks better, anyway, than he would without it. Be very careful and attentive while you are drawing your first whale from my sample, and writing the word and figures under it, so that you will not need to copy the sample anymore. Compare your copy with the sample. Examine closely. If you find you have got everything right, and can shut your eyes, and see the picture and call the words and figures, then turn the sample and copy upside down, and make the next copy from memory, and also the next and next, and so on, always drawing and writing from memory until you have finished the whole 21. This will take you 20 minutes, or 30, and by that time you will find that you can make a whale in less time than an unpracticed person can make a sardine. Also, up to the time you die you will always be able to furnish William's dates to any ignorant person that inquires after them. You will now take 13 pieces of blue paper, each 2 inches square, and do William too. Fig. 4. Make him spout his water forward instead of backward. Also make him small, and stick a harpoon in him, and give him that sick look in the eye. Otherwise you might seem to be continuing the other William, and that would be confusing and a damage. It is quite right to make him small. He was only about a number 11 whale, or along there somewhere. There wasn't room in him for his father's great spirit. The barb of that harpoon ought not to show like that, because it is down inside the whale, and ought to be out of sight, but it cannot be helped. If the barb were removed, people would think someone had stuck a whipstock into the whale. It is best to leave the barb the way it is, then everyone will know it is a harpoon and attending to business. Remember, draw from the copy only once. Make your other 12 and the inscription from memory. Now the truth is that, whenever you have copied a picture, and its inscription once from my sample, and two or three times from memory, the details will stay with you, and be hard to forget. After that, if you like, you may make merely the whale's head and water spout for the conqueror till you end his reign, each time saying the inscription in place of writing it, and in the case of William too. Make the harpoon alone, and say over the inscription each time you do it. You see, it will take nearly twice as long to do the first set as it will to do the second, and that will give you a marked sense of the difference in length of the two reigns. Next, do Henry I. On 35 squares of red paper. Fig. 5. That is a hen, and suggests Henry by furnishing the first syllable. When you have repeated the N and the inscription until you are perfectly sure of them, draw merely the N's head the rest of the 35 times, saying over the inscription each time. Thus, Fig. 6. You begin to understand how this procession is going to look when it is on the wall. First there will be the conqueror's 21 whales and water spouts, the 21 white squares joined to one another, and making a white stripe 3.5 feet long, the 13 blue squares of William II, will be joined to, that a blue stripe 2 feet, 2 inches long, followed by Henry's red stripe 5 feet, 10 inches long, and so on. The colored divisions will smartly show to the eye the difference in the length of the reins, and impress the proportions on the memory and the understanding. Fig. 7. Stephen of Blois comes next. He requires 19 2-inch squares of yellow paper. Fig. 8. That is a steer. The sound suggests the beginning of Stephen's name. I choose it for that reason. I can make a better steer than that, when I am not excited. But this one will do. It is a good enough steer for history. The tail is defective, but it only wants straightening out. Next comes Henry II. Give him 35 squares of red paper. These hens must face west, like the former ones. Fig. 9. This hen differs from the other one. He is on his way to inquire what has been happening in Canterbury. How we arrive at Richard I, called Richard of the Lion Heart, because he was a brave fighter, and was never so contented as when he was leading crusades in Palestine, and neglecting his affairs at home. Give him 10 squares of white paper. Fig. 10. That is a lion. His office is to remind you of the lion-hearted Richard. There is something the matter with his legs, but I do not quite know what it is. They do not seem right. I think the hind ones are the most unsatisfactory. The front ones are well enough, though it would be better if they were rights and lefts. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.